Translation by His Divine Grace, E.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Dadachi, Sibi, and many other great personalities were willing to sacrifice even their lives for the benefit of the people in general. This is the evidence of history. So why not give up this insignificant land? What is the serious consideration against it? Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Bali Maharaj was prepared to give everything to Lord Vishnu and Sukracharya. Being a professional priest, might have been anxiously waiting, doubting whether there had been any such instance in history in which one had given everything in charity. Bali Maharaj, however, cited the tangible examples of Maharaj Sibi and Maharaj Dadhichi, who had given up their lives for the benefit of the general public. Certainly one has attachment for everything material, especially one's land, but land and other possessions are forcibly taken away at the time of death, as stated in Bhagavad Gita, Nityo Sarva Harasjaham. The Lord personally appeared to Bali Maharaj to take away everything he had, and thus he was so fortunate that he could see the Lord face to face. Non-devotees, however, cannot see the Lord face to face. To such persons, the Lord appears as death and takes away all the possessions by force. Under the circumstances, why should we not part with our possessions and deliver them to Lord Vishnu for his satisfaction? Sri Chanaka Pandit says, in this regard, Nanimiti varam tyago vinasi niyati sati. Chanaka Shloka 36. Since our money and possessions do not last, but will somehow or other be taken away, as long as they are in our possession, it is better to use them for charity to enable noble cause. Therefore, Bali Maharaj defied the order of his so-called spiritual master. Om Jnanatimirandasya Jnananjana Salakaya Chaksurunmalitanjena Tasme Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manubhistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Karamayam Daratisva Parantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yata Padakamalam Shri Guran Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Tham Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parichana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakha Vitam Sra He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpati Gopisha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostase Dr. Kanchana Gorange, Radhe Vrindavaneshwari, Vishabhanu Sudadevi, Pranamami Aripriye, Vanchakalpa Tarubhyascha, Kripasundubhyevacha, Patitanam Pavanibhyo, Vaishnavibhyo, Namo Namo, Shri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Shri Advaita Gadadara, Shivasadi Gora Bhakta Vrinda, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, like always, we take the blessings from all the Vaishnavas present here to give some inspiration to say some words on this very exalted book, the Srimad Bhagavatam, who is no different to Krishna himself. So, with my meager intelligence, I should try and say something. So here we can see that how Sukracharya is still trying his best. He's trying his utmost to see how he can stop Bali Maharaj from parting with all his possessions. Because he was motivated in some way to benefit from the wealth of Bali Maharaj. So you can see here how that it is so, even the spiritual master can cheat us and we have to be so aware and intelligent. Sometimes they say blind faith, but blind faith means discrimination as well. We have to check whether the spiritual master is following according to Shastra, is giving the teachings according is set out in the Vedic literatures, and take knowledge and understanding from Guru Parampara. So here, Sukracharya, he is asking, he is making some points here in the beginning, in the summary of this chapter. He is saying, he's giving some arguments, he's giving three arguments. He says, although you've given your word to Sukracharya is saying, although Bali Maharaj, you gave your word to the Brahman about giving up this land, still you can change your mind. It's not too late. So, in other words, it's not an offense if you said it in a joke, if you jokingly said it. Or you have to think of the wealth of the people. Why you don't have to part with all this wealth that you have. You think of the wealth of the people. Mainly, there was a motivation behind, well, you know, one of the people is me, Sukracharya. So, and there was the third one was, yeah, response to the first one, it was said in a joke, response to danger in acting for the welfare of for others. So these are the three things he's using as an argument, and he's anxiously waiting for Bali Maharaj to change his mind, because he's thinking there's no other king or saintly person who has given all his possession in charity, and he's hoping that Bali Maharaj won't remember anything. But fortunately, Bali Maharaj was very saintly. Although he was born of a demoniac family, still he had a lot of intelligence. He knew Shastra, so he knew that he knew some great saints and kings that have given in charity. Normally, the kings and kshatriyas, they would completely work for the welfare of the citizens, sacrificing their own life. So here, Bali Maharaj is giving the example of Dadhichi. So Dadhichi was a very great sage. One time, he was asked by the Ashwini Kumaras for imparting Brahma Vidya, knowledge of spiritual matters. And Dadhichi was very eagerly wanting to impart knowledge. This is the compassion of and the magnanimity of exalted personality. They always want to impart knowledge for those that are lacking. So in this way, when the Ashwini Kumaras begged, Dadhichi to impart some Brahma Vidya, some spiritual knowledge, then Lord Indra intervened. So he came and he said, no, you shouldn't be imparting this knowledge to these little boys, because they are just physicians. They got knowledge only about material things, so you can't impart spiritual knowledge. So because the boys were so eager to understand about spiritual life, then they said to Dadhichi, look, we're so eager to want to know about this Brahma Vidya. Please, what you can do, they gave him some advice. What you can do, well, before that, Lord Indra said, he threatened Dadhichi. He said, if you impart knowledge to these Ashwini Kumaras, then I am going to chop your head off, going to cut your head off. So the boys, listening to this, they said to Dadhichi, please, What you can do is replace your head with the head of a horse. This is inconceivable. I mean, therefore, it's explained that only devotees that have faith in Krishna and accept Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead should be reading these books, because it's inconceivable. Chop a head off and replace it with a horse. Could anyone in the material world, without knowing about Krishna consciousness, understand this? One time, my husband's brother, he read Krishna book. Somehow or other, he chose Putana, the story of Putana. And then he came across when Krishna sucked the life force of Putana. And then when she fell, she fell like 8 miles. She was like dropped, you know, all the trees were falling. She was like 8 miles long. Everything was falling. And then we went to visit, but he had read Krishna book. So when we went to visit, he said to us, "What is wrong with you guys? Are you seriously saying that you believe in these books? Can anyone, you know, be 8 miles long, fall 8 miles long?" And he said, "You guys in cuckoo land." he couldn't believe. So it's so important that there's no blasphemy when we're reading this book. So what happened was, when the Ashwini Kumaras asked the Dichi to replace it, he agreed. He agreed because he wanted to give knowledge. And if someone is eagerly want to hear, then the speaker feels more happy to impart, you know, knowledge. If someone's here, if you're talking to somebody and they're all over the place looking around, then you try to conclude your subject as soon as possible, because the person is not interested, and you don't pursue with whatever you have to say. But because the Ashwini Kumaras were so eager, then Dadichi felt it was his duty to impart this knowledge. So he agreed, and the Ashwini Kumaras, they were very clever. They said, "Anyway, if Lord Indra chops your head, no problem. It's only a horse's head, so we can replace your head again." So this was one of the sages that was so selfless. For his own life, he sacrificed to impart knowledge. So, and then Bali Maharaj, he also used another example, Maharaj Sipi. And Maharaj Sipi was even more extreme. He was, Maharaj Sipi was an associate of Yayati. And Yayati was very friendly with him and took him around to the heavenly planets. And Maharaj Sipi was very pleased with Yayati, and he offered to give him his kingdom. And Yayati was so pleased with him, he started glorifying him to all the demigods. So when Maharaj Sipi came back to rule his kingdom, the demigod wanted to test him to see, you know, how advanced he is and how magnanimous he is with his charity. So the King of Heaven took the form of a bird hunter. And it's 6452 in Srimad Bhagavatam. It explains that a bird hunter is an eagle, and a pigeon. Normally, the eagle goes for pigeons. Who was the pigeon? Agnidev. The pigeon took the form of Agnidev, and King of Heaven was with Yamaraj. So Maharaj Sipi became very friendly with Yamaraj as well. So anyway, while he was ruling his kingdom, this eagle was flying to get hold of the pigeon, and the pigeon fell on the lap of Maharaj Sipi. So because he was very protective to all living entities, be they animal, human beings, all living entities, He was very, he was caring about the wealth of this pigeon. So, and then the eagle came to get the pigeon. And then Maharaj Sibi said, no, you don't need to eat this pigeon. I will give you, I'll replace you some other flesh so you can be satisfied. So this eagle said, no, I want this pigeon that you have on your lap. So Maharaj Sibi said, okay. He said, if you don't want to give me the pigeon, then you have to give me your flesh exactly the weight of the pigeon. So that's a bit extreme, isn't it? So, and then Maharaj Sibi agreed. So he's actually cutting off his flesh from his body to the weight of the pigeon that was in his lap and offering it to the eagle. And he continued doing it. Because this was a test, then the pigeon, through its mystic power, became heavier and heavier. And then in that way, he was cutting more and more flesh, trying to match the weight of the pigeon. In this way, the demigods were very, very pleased with him. And then they showed their true form. This way. So you can see how the great sages, because they have so much caring about the citizens and providing welfare work, that they sacrifice their own lives to do this. So Prabhupada explains in a purport in Bhagavad Gita that Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Sarva Dharman 1866, Sarva Dharman Parichacha Mamekam Sharanam Braja Aham Pam Sarva Papibhyo Mukshasyami Masacha. So he says, just like how Krishna abandons all varieties of religion, and Krishna says, abandon all varieties of religion and surrender to me, just like that, the king or a great sage or saint, he is a representative of Krishna. So he should also surrender all his wealth, all his possession for the welfare of the people, like that. So in this way, Bali Maharaj is explaining to Sukracharya why it's absolutely necessary that he gives this land to the Vamanadev. And he also says, if you say this is Vishnu, then why shouldn't I give all my wealth to Vishnu? Because he is the possessor of all wealth anyway. He is the controller of every situation. Aham sarvasyas prabhavos mata sarvam pravaritet. He is the source of all material and spiritual worlds. Why shouldn't I give him this? So, in the summary of the first chapter, as soon as Bali Maharaj thought that Krishna is the supreme, Vishnu is the supreme, why shouldn't I give him everything? At that point, Vishnu showed his universal form to Bali Maharaj. And he came, Bali Maharaj saw Vishnu face to face. And he said, it's very, very rare, Bali Maharaj born from a demon family, but he could see the Lord. And he actually saw all the details of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He saw the garland on his neck, he saw the yellow garments that he was wearing, he saw the crown. And he saw the full ornaments of the Supreme Lord, and he was very, very pleased with this. So Prabhupada explains that why should we be attached to our possessions, our wealth? It's going to be taken away from us anyway, no matter how much we got. Why don't we give in charity? Then he explains how much, whatever money we have, we should give 50% to the for some spiritual activities, and then we should work, manage, see how we can manage with the other 50%. Of course, in this day and age, it's very difficult to do that with the government, you know, cheating and collecting taxes. We have to like practically struggle for our existence out there in the material world. So sometimes it's according to time, place, and circumstances we have to, you know, act or do something that we need to do. If we in some way or other seem not to be following what the Srila Prabhupada or the spiritual masters are saying. But the sincerity of heart is very important. We may not be following whatever Srila Prabhupada is saying, whatever the scripture is, according to time, place, and circumstances, but at the same time, in our heart, we have to have the thought of wanting to give and wanting to please and be charitable, even though physically we might not be able to do it. So the thought should always be there that you want to give. So yeah, Srila Prabhupada explains that Bhagavad Gita 10:34, he says that at some point in our life we have to die, and to the materialists, death comes, Krishna comes as death. But for a devotee, if he practices Krishna consciousness and he follows, the secret of success is to follow the orders of the spiritual master. If he in this way follows the regulative principles as described and Rupa Goswami makes some very... He gives some principles of how we can get rid of our material desires and material activities. All the simple things that that we should be doing can nullify our sinful activities from thousands and thousands of years. So he explains that we should be conscious when we come in to the temple, where everything that we do as is a purification process for us. Bowing down, when we come to the temple, when we bowing down, it's not a mechanical thing, because when we bowing down, it's explained that in Nectar of Devotion that we shouldn't consider bowing down the temple equal to someone that's performing sacrifices. It's not equal. It's much superior to bow down to the Supreme Personality of God, superior than for performing sacrifices. Also, dancing in the temple, there's beautiful explanations here given about how one can, you know, get rid of sinful life. I'll just name a few. To avoid blasphemy of devotees, it's explained if someone hears and remains in the same place, if someone is blaspheming and you remain in the same place, he loses all his pious credit. You know, so, and tilak and beads, if you're wearing tilak and beads, its presence actually purifies the world. If someone sees you with tilak and neck beads in the street, they look at you and they're thinking, who is this person? Then they want to inquire. It actually is a purification process because you start off someone's life. And then accepting flower garlands. Sometimes if someone just gives us a garland, you think, oh, thank you, I'm getting special mercy. But what is that special mercy? We don't really think, you know, we don't really look at the significance or the meaning of all the little things that happen in the temple. So we should wonder why, what is the significance of having garland, bowing down, ringing the bell, dancing, chanting, clapping hands, all these things have a significance in our life, and it's slowly and slowly purifying our existence of all our sinful, you know, activities from previous life and also from this life as well. So accepting flower garlands and saintly articles is not, is articles conquers material energy. Actually, when we accept all, it actually conquers material energy. And when we're dancing in the temple, burn sinful activities accumulated for thousands of years. So everyone should dance in the temple. When we're dancing in the temple, thousands of years, that's a long time. Well, it depends how much enthusiasm you put in your dancing. If you're chanting and you're dancing, it's explained, Rupa Goswami explains that, thousands of births. And when you stand up to see the deities, one gets purified of sins. When you stand up to see the deities or you stand up for some great personality that coming in, it purifies one's sins. So Prabhupada says that in 1034, he says, like, everyone has to die, and we go through different changes. We are born, we grow for a bit, we remain for some time, and we reproduce and dwindle and die. And he says, Krishna has opulence, fame, fortune, fine speech, memory, intelligence, and patience. And if a person possesses a few of these, he becomes famous. And if a person performs all of this, they can possess all of it, but in limited quantity. It cannot be in full. So, and if they possess these qualities, they'd be very, very elevated and very, very famous, but they have to die. So no matter how much opulence you have, how much positions you have, how much fame, whatever the case may be, you're still at the time of death. Krishna comes and takes everything away. So, so if a person possesses some of all of them in some, he is glorious. So to remember a subject matter, Prabhupada is saying, if you remember a subject matter, it's called smriti. And this is like a real gift, to remember something you heard or you read something. But if you can remember or from many books, if you read many books and you can remember everything, then it's called medha. Medha is intelligence. You got intelligence. And then from metta comes a quality whereby one can overcome unsteadiness and firmness, which is called dhriti. A person who is fully qualified in the above three and still remain humble, it's very difficult. It's very difficult to have, you don't say 26 qualities of a devotee. Even if you have 50% or 25%, because as soon as you have qualifications, then automatically what follows? Glorification. And then as soon as glorification comes, if we're not careful, what comes? Become puffed up. You become puffed up, and then you become proud, and from pride comes a fall. So it's so very important that we always very, very conscious. Shri Shri Radha Gokulananda Ki Jai. So when a person is humble and gentle, in spite of all the qualities that he possesses, then he develops the opulence called patience, shama. Patience. When you have patience with anything, then you become very tolerant. When you're tolerant, then you become humbled and a blade of grass, then you develop humility. So in this way, it is very difficult, but Prabhupada explains that gradually we have to work towards this. If we don't practice, Prabhupada said, practice and make it become a habit. And once something becomes a habit, then it becomes second nature. So practice, let it become a habit, and once it becomes a habit, it becomes whatever we're practicing becomes second nature. Like if you're rising at 4 o'clock or 3 o'clock in the morning, if you're doing it over a long period of time, you wouldn't need a alarm clock anymore. The body becomes your alarm clock. At that certain time, your sleep breaks and you rise. Like Mother Kulangana, I don't think she needs alarm clock. She just sleep breaks at a certain time. She rises, very regulated. So like this, anything that we practice, we come to the morning program, we come to Bhagavad. If we do it, you know, really, really steadily, Krishna will help, and he promises this. He will help us. Manmana bhava mad bhakto. Always think of me, become my devotee, and worship me with all your hearts. You will come to me without fail. I promise you this, because you are my very dear friend. So he's calling us time and time again. And then Prabhupada says, knowledge comes from instructions, knowledge comes from books, knowledge comes from the spiritual master. We got Guru Parampara. We go by descending knowledge from Guru Parampara, not ascending knowledge. So if we take the humble position, then we are safe. I missed out anything. Yeah, in this purport, it explains that Bali Maharaj was a professional priest. So I was looking, what's the meaning of professional? Why is a priest professional? And one of them, it was quite significant meaning. A professional is one engaging for gain or livelihood in an activity or field of endeavor. And there was another meaning, there's sufficient experience or skill in an occupation or activity to resemble a profession or breaking of rules. So it's amazing that these three meanings like kind of tie in with this the purport that Srila Prabhupada is giving. So the first one is engaging for his own livelihood. Sukracharya was actually thinking, if Bali Maharaj gave everything to the Supreme Lord, then which means I can't get anything, you know. I can't have a disciple that doesn't give me dakshin or give me something in return for the knowledge I'm imparting. So livelihood or activity, and he was wondering how he was going to survive, which means he wasn't totally and utterly dependent on the Supreme Lord for his maintenance. And then sufficient experience or skill in an occupation or activity. So his skill or his experience was misdirected. So we can see how he wanted to his disciple Bali Maharaj to deviate from the principles. And he was actually breaking the rules. That's one of the meaning for professionals. Sometimes they break the rules. And we can see here Bali Maharaj, Sukracharya was actually breaking the rule in one sense, although he was using arguments, giving reasons why he shouldn't part with the land. So we'll stop here. We've got 10 minutes for discussions or questions or whatever.